Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer with you on WNYC. Good morning again, everybody. We are so fortunate this morning that my next guest, Wendell Berry, keeps winning awards. The poet, novelist, essayist, activist, and farmer traveled to the city from his farm in Kentucky to receive a 2013 Four Freedoms Medal from the Roosevelt Institute in a ceremony last night for his message of personal responsibility to one's community and environment, as they put it. He can add that to the National Humanities Medal and the Richard C. Holbrooke Distinguished Achievement Award, to name two other recent accolades. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much.
Your mantelpiece must be getting pretty full. Does it feel good, or would you rather see policy changes instead of certificates and medals?
I would rather see policy changes, of course.
And from that long string of titles, poet, novelist, essayist, activist, and farmer, is there one that gives you the most satisfaction?
Good work gives me satisfaction, whatever it is. And the work isn't always good, but when it's good, it's sustaining, and sometimes I'm very happy with it.
Well, one piece of your good work, I think, has left you way ahead of your time, because you've been writing about and practicing organic farming since the 1970s, and that the attention you pay to agriculture that works with nature instead of conquering it, yes, is what has gained you so much attention. Would you say you were a locavore before it was cool?
Probably I was, because I grew up eating locally grown food, that is, in kitchens that weren't very far from the garden where the food had been raised, or the hen yard, or the hog lot. But I should say that I'm not, I don't make my living by farming. We have been at our place subsistence farmers in a big way when the children were smaller and we were younger, and not so big a way now when we're older and
right,
the children are gone.
But to that point, I've seen a question raised around your writing and your philosophy that if all farmers adhered to your principles, would we still have enough food?
The question really is, will we continue to have enough food if we keep violating the laws of nature by which the land is maintained and that we have to observe in using the land, if we're not to waste it? So the idea that we can keep on the way we're going and feed more and more people at the cost of more and more soil erosion and water pollution is not a question that is very difficult to answer. You can't feed people by destroying the land resource, or as Aldo Leopold called it, the land community.
You may be best known as a Kentucky farmer and, of course, a writer and activist, but at root, a Kentucky farmer. But you also lived and taught in the Bronx, didn't you?
I did. I taught at the so-called University College of NYU in 1962 to 1964. And I lived on the Lower West Side, so I had a lot of reading time on the subway.
And what was that like for you?
Well, it was a very interesting time in my life. I enjoyed New York. I don't know if I would have enjoyed it. I don't know if I would have enjoyed it if I had thought I could never leave. But it was exhilarating to be here.
Does your insistence on paying attention to the land make sense for city residents, where nature may spring up between the cracks, but without the high rises, there may not be land left over for farms upstate or even in Kentucky?
It's not a question of whether it makes sense or not. It's a question of whether it's a necessity or not. Good farming doesn't have an adequate political constituency. So everything depends on the development of an already existing urban agrarianism, that is a company of people, the rapidly growing, actually, in the cities, who understand the requirements of good land use and the value of locally grown fresh produce.
You must be encouraged to see the rise of CSAs, these community-supported agriculture groups where people in the city actually know what particular farm some of their produce is coming from.
Of course I'm encouraged by that, but I am discouraged to know that on land use as a whole, this movement has no influence so far. The use of corn and beans for biofuel, for instance, is driving those two crops out of the Midwest into country like mine that is sloping and highly vulnerable to erosion. And this is growing worse.
One thing the Congress wasn't dealing with during these last few weeks of manufactured crisis was the Farm Bill. And we see that back in 2009, you called for a 50-year Farm Bill. Would you want this Congress to enact a bill that would set our course for the next 50 years?
My friends and I, who are supporting the 50-year Farm Bill, think that it's necessary to offer legislation that can't pass because it's time to begin talking about a better kind of land use. And this Farm Bill proposes the conversion of agriculture over 50 years from 20% perennial crops and 80% annuals to the opposite, 80% perennial and 20% annual, because one of the requirements that nature imposes upon us is to keep the land covered, protected. This also would reduce carbon emissions and that abuse of the air. And I think most of my allies would also be for capping carbon emissions and rationing fossil fuel.
Which is a tough sell in your home state of Kentucky.
It's a hopeless
coal
sell.
Country.
It's a hopeless sell at present. It needs to be talked about. These ideas need to be inserted into the national dialogue. And so we do it when we can.
I read that you've said that after a lifetime of writing, the two things that got the most attention were a 1987 essay for Harper's on why you don't own a computer and some remarks you made in support of gay marriage, despite your being a Baptist and a devout one. So did you ever get a computer?
No, I never did get a computer because I don't need one. I'm not a Baptist in any formal way. I go to the Baptist church where my wife plays the piano on days of bad weather. On days of good weather, I ramble off into the woods somewhere. I am a person who takes the gospel seriously, but I have had trouble conforming my thoughts to a denomination.
Let me get back to the computer for a minute. Somebody maintains a Twitter handle under your name, right? You sanction that?
I hear that those things are done. I hear that I have a website. But I didn't do those things. My instrument is a pencil.
And do you want your grandchildren to not own computers? The comedian Louis C.K. told the talk show host that he didn't want his kids to have smartphones because they'd never learn to sit and feel sadness if they could always distract themselves. Does that sound right, or do you not go that far?
Oh, I wouldn't go so far as to impose any kind of restriction of that, a technological proscription on my grandchildren. I want my grandchildren to be free. My grandchildren, I may say, are a little self-conscious about bringing their electronic equipment when they come to see their granny and me. But that's all right. When they come there, they find that life is interesting even without those things, and that's what we want them to know.
So before you go, you've talked about a number of policies that you'd like to see enacted that you acknowledge are impossible right now. Fighting coal in Kentucky, climate change legislation in a larger sense, your idea of a 50-year farm bill. Is there one prescription that you'd like to leave us with that you think may actually be achievable in the relatively near term, worth fighting for?
I have fought all my life for things I've thought were worth fighting for. And actually, we've won several significant victories that have been very heartening. As for a large victory, we haven't won one. And I don't think that we're likely to do one. I don't think we're likely to see a 50-year farm bill passed very soon. On the other hand, a lot of things are happening that I didn't expect to live to see. The vogue of farmers markets, local economy work, and we have a very well-advanced and capable regional farm economy for Louisville, not completed yet, but well started and very hope-giving. So I haven't prospected about what the future is going to be. I have simply looked at what might be done now that would be helpful.
Poet, novelist, essayist, activist, farmer Wendell Berry. He traveled to New York from his farm in Kentucky to receive a 2013 Four Freedoms Medal from the Roosevelt Institute in a ceremony last night for his message of personal responsibility to one's community and environment, as they put it. Thank you so much for making a detour to our studio. I really am honored.
Well, thank you. I've appreciated it and enjoyed it.
And listeners, for those of you interested in these kinds of topics, we invite you to come join me in the green space for a climate change summit featuring science, policy, and art. That will be a week from today, Thursday afternoon, October 24th, as we approach the anniversary of Sandy. I'll host four great guests as part of a MARFA Dialogue series here in New York. One of our guests is the legendary environmentalist Amory Lovins, who's coming in from Colorado for this. Another is the architect and designer Guy Nordenson. Should be really interesting. Tickets are $15, $10 for students and employees of nonprofit groups. More information about this event in the green space that I'll be hosting a week from today, Thursday, October 24th at 2 in the afternoon. More information at wnyc.org/thegreenspace.